Delia writes a blog from Colombia. She publishes an article accusing a Franklin restaurant of fraud. She wrote it for a Franklin audience. She built it on Franklin sources. Now, the restaurant sues her in Franklin, and her lawyer asks the first question every defense lawyer asks. Does this court have any power over my client? Yes, Franklin can hear that case, even though Delia wrote every word in Colombia. That question comes first for a reason. Personal jurisdiction is the court's power over this defendant, and a judgment entered without it is void, unenforceable. The defendant can ignore the suit and attack the judgment later. By the end of this episode, you will know why Delia has to show up, and you will run any jurisdiction fact pattern the same way. Here is the route. First, the two-step, a long-arm statute, then the Constitution, then the constitutional floor, minimum contacts, then the three routes through it, traditional bases, general jurisdiction, where a defendant is at home, and specific jurisdiction, the three-part test that decides most cases, then the four settings the exam recycles, and finally, consent and waiver, which can shortcut everything. Keep two powers apart. Subject matter jurisdiction is power over the type of case. Personal jurisdiction is power over this defendant. A court can have the right kind of case and still lack power over the person in front of it. Every problem is then two questions stacked. Step one is statutory. Does a long-arm statute authorize this court to reach this defendant? Step two is constitutional. Does that satisfy due process? You clear both, or you have nothing. Which due process? In state court, the 14th Amendment. In a federal question case measuring nationwide contacts, the 5th. Most modern long-arm statutes reach as far as the Constitution allows, so the fight is usually at step two. Statute first, Constitution second. Step 1. A long-arm statute is the legislature's grant of power to reach defendants outside the state's borders, and it comes in two flavors. Enumerated Act statutes list the triggering acts. Franklin's, at Section 5.03, covers transacting business in Franklin, committing a tortious act there, owning real property there, or contracting to insure a person or risk located there. Fit no listed category, no jurisdiction. The other flavor, the California style, reaches to the full extent the Constitution allows, collapsing step one into step two. In federal court, Rule 4K1A borrows the long arm of the state where the court sits, and Rule 4K2 measures nationwide contacts when a federal claim defendant is beyond every single state. Back to Delia. Does committing a tortious act within Franklin cover an out-of-state writer whose words land in Franklin? Many courts read that language to include out-of-state acts causing in-state injury, so the statute likely reaches her. But the steps stay separate. Being inside the statute's words never skips the constitutional check. Step 2, the constitutional floor. Since 1945, due process permits jurisdiction over an out-of-state defendant on one condition. It must have such minimum contacts with the forum that the suit does not offend traditional notions of fair play and substantial justice. Contacts and fairness. Even jurisdiction resting on the defendant's property in the state must satisfy that standard. From that one test grew three routes. Route 1. The traditional bases, so strong that no contacts weighing is required. Physical presence when served, called tag or transient jurisdiction. Then domicile, the permanent home a person intends to keep. Then consent. Then waiver. Try 1. An executive domiciled in Olympia flies to Franklin for a friend's wedding. Walking to his gate, a process server hands him a summons on a contract negotiated, signed, and performed entirely in Olympia. Jurisdiction or nothing? Jurisdiction. He was voluntarily present when served, and TAG never asks whether the claim relates to the forum, even if he is only passing through. Now, change one fact. The person served in that terminal is a corporation's chief financial officer, changing planes. Does that give Franklin power over the company? No. TAG reaches individuals, not corporations. You cannot tag a company by serving an employee who happens to be in the state. Route 2. General jurisdiction, the all-purpose kind. If a defendant is at home in the forum, that court hears any claim against it, even one with zero connection to the state. Powerful and narrow. An individual is at home at their domicile, a corporation in two places, its state of incorporation and its principal place of business, the nerve center where top officers direct and control it. Anywhere else, only in a rare, exceptional case. Memorize the phrase. Affiliations so continuous and systematic as to render it essentially at home there. Test yourself. A restaurant chain is incorporated in Olympia and headquartered in Columbia. It runs 40 locations in Franklin, employs more than 2,000 Franklin workers, and earns roughly a fifth of its national revenue there. At home in Franklin? No. The old doing business theory of general jurisdiction is dead. Thousands of employees and a fifth of the revenue do not make a company at home. When a big out-of-state company is sued on a forum-related claim, the answer is almost always specific jurisdiction. Route 3. Specific jurisdiction is by far the most tested. It reaches a claim growing out of the defendant's own dealings with the forum, even when the defendant is not at home. Three requirements, always in order. Purposeful availment. Relatedness. Reasonableness. Part 1. Purposeful availment. The defendant must have purposefully availed itself of the privilege of conducting activities in the forum, invoking the benefits and protections of its laws. The contact must flow from the defendant's own deliberate choice, not a random, fortuitous, or attenuated link, not the unilateral act of the plaintiff or a third party, and the foreseeability that counts is a particular kind, not that a product could end up in the forum. It is that the defendant's own conduct connects it to the forum, so it should reasonably anticipate being hailed into court. A Columbia consumer buys a car from a Columbia dealer and drives it into Olympia, where it catches fire. Has the dealer availed itself of Olympia? No. The car got there by the buyer's act. Contrast a manufacturer that advertises and ships into Olympia. Purposeful. Contract cases call this availment. Tort cases call it direction. Both mean deliberate targeting. Part 2. Relatedness. The claim must arise out of or relate to those contacts, and the connection cannot be borrowed. Hundreds of plaintiffs sue a drug maker in Franklin. Some bought and took the drug in Franklin. The rest bought it and were injured entirely elsewhere. Can the non-residents ride along? No. Each plaintiff's claim needs its own tie to the forum, but relate to is broader than causation. In 2021, the Supreme Court held that arise out of or relate to is written in the alternative, so no but-for causation is required. An automaker advertises, sells, and services its most popular model throughout a state. A resident is injured when the vehicle she owns fails, though that vehicle was built and first sold elsewhere. Related? Yes. It cultivated the forum market for that model. Part 3. Reasonableness. And the burden flips. Once the plaintiff shows purposeful, claim-related contacts, the defendant must present a compelling case that jurisdiction would be so gravely unfair as to be unconstitutional. Defendants rarely win it. Inconvenient witnesses will not do. The classic exception is a foreign defendant dragged into a United States forum over a dispute barely connected to it. Five factors, and you should list them cold. The burden on the defendant. The forum state's interest. The plaintiff's interest in convenient and effective relief. The interstate judicial system's interest in efficient resolution. And the shared interest of the states in furthering fundamental substantive social policies. Now, the four settings the exam recycles, because the test never changes, but the contact looks different. Intentional torts first, the effects test. A tort expressly aimed at the forum, with harm the defendant knows will be felt there, is itself the contact, even if the defendant never sets foot in the state, which is Delia, Franklin sources, Franklin readers, a Franklin restaurant. She aimed at Franklin, so Franklin hears the libel claim. But there is a hard limit. Two Franklin business owners ship a parcel. It passes through a courier's depot in Olympia, where the depot manager empties it and writes false paperwork saying it arrived empty. Everything he does happens in Olympia. He knows the owners are based in Franklin. They sue him there. Jurisdiction? No. The defendant's own conduct must connect him to the forum state, not merely to a plaintiff who happens to live there. Harm to a resident is not enough on its own. That is the line between Delia and the depot manager. She aimed at Franklin. He aimed at a parcel. Second setting, contracts. A contract with a forum resident, standing alone, does not create jurisdiction. Courts look at the whole relationship, prior negotiations, contemplated future consequences, the terms, the course of dealing. A Columbia entrepreneur signs a 20-year franchise agreement with a Franklin franchisor, agrees Franklin law governs, pays Franklin monthly, and takes direction from Franklin staff. He never visits. Franklin still has jurisdiction, and that choice of law clause is a plus factor, not decisive. Third setting, stream of commerce, where you need both tests, because the Supreme Court is split with no majority rule. Under the mere stream view, placing goods into the stream while aware they will be marketed in the forum is enough. Under stream of commerce plus, it is not. The defendant needs an extra act showing intent to serve that forum. Designing for that market, advertising there, a distributor who serves it. A later fractured decision reaffirmed the split and stressed that the defendant must target the specific forum state, not the country as a whole. So apply both tests and say the rule is unsettled. A passive component maker likely loses under plus. Fourth setting, the internet. A purely passive website, viewable everywhere, is generally not a contact with any forum. Courts use a sliding scale, but the modern focus is the familiar question. Did the defendant aim its online activity at this forum? An Olympia retailer that ships to Franklin customers, collects Franklin sales tax, and buys Franklin-targeted ads has aimed at Franklin. An Olympia hobbyist whose static blog a Franklin reader happens to open has not. Same internet, opposite answers. The variable is targeting. Last, consent and waiver, which can shortcut everything. Four routes in. Express consent, usually a forum selection clause, and a freely negotiated one is generally enforced. Implied consent, like a non-resident motorist statute, where driving on the state's roads appoints a state official as your agent for service. Consent by appearance, litigating the merits without a timely objection. And consent by registration. That last one is recent. A state may condition an out-of-state corporation's registration to do business on consent to general jurisdiction in its courts. The Supreme Court held in 2023 that this does not violate due process. Flag it. The court left open a dormant Commerce Clause challenge, so the outer limits are unsettled. then waiver, where candidates lose points they should keep. Because personal jurisdiction protects a personal right, it can be waived. Subject matter jurisdiction cannot. Under the federal rules, the objection must appear in the first Rule 12 response, a pre-answer motion to dismiss, or, if none is filed, the answer. Leave it out, and the defense is gone forever. You can contest jurisdiction without submitting to it. File a Rule 12b2 motion, or a special appearance where states still use the device. But argue the merits first, or file a Rule 12 motion that omits the defense, and it is waived under Rule 12g2. Contrast Rule 12h3. A subject matter defect can be raised at any time, even first on appeal. A word on authorities, because this episode named no cases, and that was deliberate. Next-gen questions hand you a scenario and ask what the rule produces. They will not ask you for case names. Your source teaches this topic as rules, with the decisions behind them described rather than cited, and that is exactly how the exam wants it in your head. If you keep only three things, keep these. The two-step, statute, then due process, because skipping either is the classic structural error. At home means incorporation or principal place of business, and nothing less. And the three-part specific test, purposeful availment, relatedness, reasonableness, in that order, every time. Now the traps the examiners actually set. 1. The waiver trap, and it is the single most common civil procedure slip. Treating personal jurisdiction like subject matter jurisdiction. Personal jurisdiction is waivable and must be asserted immediately in the first Rule 12 response. Miss it, and a defendant with zero forum contacts is stuck. Subject matter jurisdiction is never waivable. 2. The at-home trap. Massive in-state business is not general jurisdiction. Only incorporation, principal place of business, or the exceptional case. 3. The plaintiff contacts trap. The defendant's own conduct must tie it to the forum. Harm to a resident cannot manufacture jurisdiction. 4. The two-step trap. Do not stop at the long-arm statute and do not leap straight to due process. Name and clear both. 5. The foreseeability trap. That a product could end up in the forum is not purposeful availment, and the buyer's unilateral act of taking it there is not the defendant's contact. Time for the quick check. This one comes straight from the Bargo question bank. A defendant sued in federal court believes the court has no personal jurisdiction over her, and she has no contacts with the forum state. But instead of raising that at the outset, she files a pre-answer motion to dismiss under Rule 12, arguing only that the complaint fails to state a claim. The court denies it. She then asserts lack of personal jurisdiction for the first time in her answer. Is the defense still available? Option 1. Yes, because personal jurisdiction may be raised at any time before trial. Option 2. No, because leaving it out of her earlier Rule 12 motion waived the defense. Option 3. Yes, because she asserted it in the very first answer she filed. Pause here if you want a moment. The answer is option 2. A personal jurisdiction defense is waived if it is omitted from a pre-answer Rule 12 motion the defendant does file. She moved to dismiss for failure to state a claim without raising jurisdiction, so she forfeited it, and even a defendant with zero forum contacts is now stuck. Option 1 confuses personal jurisdiction with subject matter jurisdiction. Only the latter can be raised at any time. Option 3 is the tempting one, and it is simply too late. If you felt the pull of option 3, that is the pull the examiners count on. There are 30 plus more questions on this topic alone. 5 things to take away. 1. 2 steps, always. A long-arm statute must reach the defendant, and due process must permit it. 2. The traditional bases need no contacts analysis. Serve an individual in the forum, or sue someone at their domicile. 3. General jurisdiction means at home, which, for a corporation, is incorporation and principal place of business, never volume of business. 4. Specific jurisdiction is 3 parts in order: purposeful availment, relatedness, reasonableness. And the contact looks different in tort, contract, stream of commerce, and internet cases. 5. Consent and waiver shortcut everything, and the defense is lost if it is not in the first Rule 12 response. Which brings us back to Delia, who wrote every word in Columbia and still has to defend in Franklin, because she aimed her article there. That is the topic in one line. The defendant's own reach into the forum is what gives the court its power. Next time, service, venue, and transfer. Practice this topic with more than 2,900 exam-style questions, free to start, at nextgenbargo.com. This episode is for education and exam preparation only, not legal advice, and we are not affiliated with or endorsed by the NCBE or any bar examining authority.